The Academy Award for Best Picture.
You're awesome. Come on. La La Land.
But La La Land didn't win Best Picture, did it? Warren Beatty, Academy Award winner himself, the so-called Prince of Hollywood, the pro, was given the wrong envelope. The world, for a poignant moment, forgot their differences and were united in scoffing at an old man getting something wrong. Has Beatty become an unwitting victim in all this, or did he get the lampooning he deserved? And how do you go about encapsulating the man in a single song? You're listening to The Rest Is Noise, a podcast where each week we argue for the perfect song to embody a concept, person, people, place, or thing. This week, Warren Beatty. I'm your host, Martin, and with me, a man more accustomed to carpet right than the red carpet, it's Ian, pushing the envelope to its logical extreme, it's Nathan, and to inject a bit of Hollywood glitz and glamour, we're joined by very special guest, Sarah Gill, cellist out of indie rock band Madden. So, whose fault was it then on Sunday?
Are we not all to blame? PricewaterhouseCooper.
Yeah.
We'll start with Warren himself. Should any blame be laid at his feet?
No, he got given the wrong envelope, bless him.
He was given the wrong envelope, but is it karma? Does he deserve this? He knew there was an error.
And he gave it to someone else to take the flak.
He bowled it.
Well, that's true, because he hesitated, didn't he? He saw it said Best Actress for La La Land.
Yeah.
Then he just carried on anyway, regardless.
Let a woman take the bullet for him.
I don't think that's what happened. Because if you watch his face, he recognises that it's wrong immediately. And he takes a glance behind Fade and Away, as if to say, help me. And he obviously doesn't know what to do. And he passes the card, he shows the card to Fade and Away. And then before he's had the chance to explain, or with his eyes, what's gone on. She just read what she saw.
Trying to check with her.
Yeah,
because he's... Before saying anything, but she was just like, what are you doing? Stop hesitating.
But he wasn't clear enough in doing that.
His eyes looked so lost.
Yeah, but he couldn't, like, cup his hand round his face and be like, but do you think there's something wrong?
He did have a look on his face like he had the wrong pair of glasses on.
Yeah.
Struggling to see what was on that card.
He looked so lost, I thought.
It's weird how it dredged up all of this history between them. Apparently they didn't get on particularly well when we were in films together. And her impatience at him seemed to be age old. It seemed to be something she was familiar with. And this
so she was a bit like, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, this fuddy-duddery. Yeah. I think it was really pathetic, the way he just passed it off to Fade anyway. He's like, oh, I'll wash my hands of it. It was quite cowardly. A man of integrity would have looked at it and realised there's a problem here and moved off stage to get the correct card. Imagine he'd be hailed as a hero right now if he'd done that. And he failed at that.
There's something weird about the amount of scrutiny that we're subjecting one man's singular decision in the space of like 5 seconds. Because I've thought about what I would have done in that situation should it ever arise. And I've probably done something very similar, which is not know what to do, glance around nervously with my eyes, and probably done exactly what he did.
Regardless of what the situation was, I thought it was brilliant the way the veneer just fell off of Hollywood then. And you know that behind the scenes at the Oscars, really, it's all tacked together with MDF and bits of gaffer tape. But it looks so pristine at all times just for the TV audience. And I just loved having that little glimpse into it not being quite the perfection that they like to put across the red carpet.
Let's go then to PricewaterhouseCoopers. Ian, you mentioned that the blame should be towards them.
I don't work for them.
Many people do, though. They're one of the biggest accountancy firms on the planet. They've been counting the Oscars ballot for 83 years. Supervisors,
that's a long gig, isn't it? You don't get jobs for like that last that long anymore.
We'll
do
talk about complacency. I mean, the supervisors, Brian Cullinan and Martha Ruiz, they're the only people who know the results before they are announced on Oscars night. And horrendously for them, in a Huffington Post article a week before this year's Oscars, entitled "What Would Happen If a Presenter Announced the Wrong Winner at the Oscars?" Martha Ruiz said, "We check multiple times against each other to make sure that when we leave and are ultimately handing the envelopes to someone, we're very confident they're getting the right envelopes and the contents in them are accurate."
What a failing. The greatest failing this year.
So far.
Of anyone.
We're going to move on then to some music, and we're going to try and work through Warren Beatty's potted career in chronological order. So we're going to start with you, Nathan. What have you chosen?
I've chosen Brigitte Bardot and Serge Gainsbourg, Bonnie and Clyde.
Clyde a une petite amie. Elle est belle et son prénom c'est
Bonnie.
À eux deux, ils forment le gang Barrow. Leur nom
Bonnie Parker
et Clyde Barrow.
Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
So in 1968, following a disastrous first date, Brigitte Bardot spoke to Serge Gainsbourg on the phone, and she asked him to write the most beautiful love song you can imagine. Gainsbourg wrote two. The first was "Je t'aime." And the second was this song, "Bonnie and Clyde," inspired by the 1967 film of the same name, starring Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty.
This year's Miss Bonnie Parker.
Glad to meet you.
I'm Clyde Barrow.
The film was also produced by Beatty, and he was heavily involved in getting the film made in the first place. Legend has it, Beatty got on his hands and knees and kissed the feet of Warner Brothers head honcho Benny Kalmenson in order to try and secure funding for the film. Whatever the truth, the film went ahead and established Beatty as a serious force in the film industry. So the film Bonnie and Clyde owes a great debt to the French New Wave cinema of François Truffaut and Jean-Luc Godard. It's heavily stylized, and the two main protagonists appear almost unbearably cool, albeit with a sort of slightly goofy American slant.
What's it like?
What, you mean prison?
No. Armed robbery.
And of course, depending on your point of view, the film offers a kind of surface-level nihilism masking a deeper critique of American capitalism, or else a surface-level critique of American capitalism to mask a deeper nihilism.
It's the first film that had those exploding blood pouches.
Oh.
So yeah. when
so it looked realistic when someone...
Spoiler alert, yeah. You know, Bonnie and Clyde don't get out of the story alive, and it's the first time that you see their bodies being riddled with machine gun fire. They shoot someone from point blank range in the face, don't they?
So there's a scene where they're getting away from a robbery and someone jumps onto the side of a car and Clyde shoots through the window and it hits them directly in the eye. Mm-hmm. Which sort of is kind of commonplace in modern cinema, but was fairly revolutionary back then.
This is all reflecting quite well so far on Warren Beatty. This is a man of the world, a man who will go to France, that he's trying to put himself at the cutting edge of cinema, meeting with the great minds in cinema at that time. He sounds like a determined young man with a lot of drive.
Well, he took a risk as well. He took a real risk. I think Warner Brothers hated the film. They didn't want to show it. They didn't. But in the end, it did okay.
I think it did very well. It made $70 million.
So yeah, he took a great risk and it paid off. And it also was very very good for Faye Dunaway's career up to that point as well, because she had quite a patchy film career up to that point, I think. This sort of made her, and then she had some badly received films. But
lots of women were considered for the role. His sister is Shirley MacLaine, and he asked her to play Bonnie Parker.
That would have been strange, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Parallel to Serge Gainsbourg there. Possibly regrettable co-starrings with relatives.
Did a film with Charlotte, didn't
he? Yeah, had an uncomfortable fascination with his own daughter.
Oh, no.
And challenged his critics by then writing a song which she sang on called Lemon Incest.
He did like to rile up.
Maybe he's pushed it a bit further than Warren Beatty did in that case.
But. Yeah. All right, well, we'll on that bombshell, we'll move on to my choice. Carly Simon, You're So Vain.
You probably think this song is about you.
According to Carly Simon's memoir, she was a month into a relationship with Hollywood megastar Warren Beatty when the actor called her saying that he was flying to New York from LA and he just had to see her. He arrived at 12:30 a.m. and the two, quote, made love like in a movie, unquote. And he left to be on a shoot at 5 a.m. Simon slept and then went for an appointment with her therapist where she gushed about what a sexual superman Beatty was. Suddenly, the therapist looked ill. Simon asked if she was okay before the therapist admitted, "You're not the first patient I've seen this morning who spent the night with Warren Beatty."
Wow.
A few years later, in 1972, Simon released You're So Vain, a number one hit in the US, and with lyrics that seemed to be an indictment of the hopeless vanity of a particular ex of hers. She didn't reveal who. Warren Beatty had no doubts, however. He rang Simon right away and said, "Thanks for the song, Carly."
What a twat.
That therapist. Surely there was some sort of confidentiality.
Yeah, she's definitely broken the therapist's code there.
She's breaking there.
It was the 70s.
Laws were different.
Did this really happen then?
I wonder if there's a bit of artistic license all round. But that's all right. That's all right in pop music.
Which bit didn't happen and which bit did happen? Did Warren Beatty definitely call Carly Simon up, thus sort of fulfilling the prophecy of the song as well? That almost seems a little bit too neat, doesn't it? I'm saying no, it didn't happen. None of it happened. None of it.
So you're questioning the validity of Carly's anecdote there?
Yeah,
her memoirs.
Yeah, so when I was doing the research for my choice, the idea that Bridget and Serge had a phone conversation that went that way, it didn't sit right with me, but none of you questioned that, so I just left it. But I think there's always an element of that to Hollywood stories, aren't there? I mean, this when you consider how vain most of the industry is.
I mean, my only problem with the song is that if you were really annoyed with someone enough to write that song, and they are the vain person that you're describing, then of course they're going to be delighted by having a song written about them. Which, if he did ring up and say, "Oh, thanks for the song," then it's just played into his hands.
Yeah.
Well, she has claimed since that not the whole song is about Warren Beatty. Apparently, it's a composite of three men. The second verse is Warren Beatty. She says that he obviously thinks it's all about him.
Oh, because he's so vain.
Because he's so vain. Yeah. It seems to me like she's dined out on this song for years. The identity of the three men has sort of been a closely guarded secret for decades, and one that she seems to benefit from. Although she did agree to reveal the names of the other men to a TV executive for $50,000 in charity. She also revealed over the years three letters that were in the name of the person who it's about. But those letters are A, E, and then R.
Oh, well, they're all in there.
They're all in Warren Beatty, but they're also...
They're all in Warren.
The Oxford English Dictionary states that these are the three most regularly occurring letters
in the dictionary. Maybe she's just taking the piss a bit.
A, E, and R.
A, E, and R, yeah.
Leonard Nimoy.
Well, I'll tell you the people that have been linked to being the men in the song. Mick Jagger, who actually sings backing vocal in the track.
I was going to ask who that was.
That's Mick Jagger. James Taylor, her ex-husband. David Bowie, David Cassidy, Cat Stevens, Terrence Malick, and Michael Crichton.
Wow. The writer of Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Right.
So some of them can already be eliminated because they don't have A, E, and R in their name. Warren Beatty changed his surname when he became a professional actor. He changed the spelling of his surname from Beatty with one T to Beatty with two. And his mum reckons it so that his surname had the same number of letters as his first name, so that when he was up in lights in Hollywood, it would have a bit more of a kind
symmetry.
Of balance. Yeah.
Well, I heard he added the T because he wanted people to pronounce it correctly, so it rhymed with weighty, not Wheaties.
Oh, so it's what? So his name is Warren Beatty.
It didn't help though, did it? Because, I mean, we've been calling him Warren Beatty.
Oh, I thought it was. Yeah, have you been? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We have been.
I thought it was Beatty, I think.
Maybe we should just go for Warren from now on.
Let's just call him Wazza.
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 I did also take this a little bit further as well. I took the T that he added to his name and I added it to the E and the A and the R revealed by Carly Simon, and I came up with a short list of what other potential vain people that Carly Simon might have been singing about. And this is my short list. Terence Trent D'Arby, Kate Silverton, the BBC News presenter,
yeah.
Terry Wogan, and Jack Albertson, who played Uncle Albert in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We can't discount any of them.
No.
I did wonder whether it might be Warren Mitchell.
Oh, yes, there we are.
Av Garnett.
There we are. Yeah, he was still going strong, wasn't he?
He was at that
72,
point,
yeah. Was he quite the Lothario that we now know Warren Beatty is? To go back to Carly Simon, she really was dining out on this, and she has been until 2004. She claimed to have recorded the missing name. She whispered it and reversed it and hid it on that album.
Oh, wow.
What? Does that anyone... true? They didn't found it.
Well, they have found it. Critics found it, and they thought it said David. Now, her manager, so in the 70s, was David Geffen, who's actually a homosexual. When she was challenged on this, she said, no, 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 it's not David, it's Ovid.
It sounds like she's stretching it a bit. I don't know. A lot of songwriters wouldn't necessarily... I mean, the meaning of a song might change over time, or it might just... You might take lots of different aspects of your life that wouldn't always necessarily be like, this is about this person, this is about this three people. It's a bit unusual to be like, oh, this verse is about... I don't know.
And maintain
it seems
that
like it's... Well, maybe what you say is she's dined out on it a bit and it suited her to keep the myth going. Oh, is it him? Is it not him?
I suppose, though, she had one other option, which was to never talk about this. But she's probably been asked the same inane questions for the last 40 or 50 years. Mm. And her one response could be to be quite churlish and standoffish, but she's a fair play to
making
her
for, ridiculous
for,
embrace,
yeah, for embracing it. And because that's it as well. When you're a person in Hollywood and also a woman in Hollywood, people will come back to this sort of rubbish repeatedly, again and again. And so I'd say fair enough to it.
Before we talk about Warren Beatty one final time,
Beatty.
I'll say one more thing and join you actually in praising Carly Simon. Last year, in the lead up to last year's election, she allowed the song to be used in an advert against Donald Trump.
Well, that really worked.
So
was it about him?
All along, she's now claimed. Yeah.
Wow, this is pointless.
Bang on, has he got all the letters in there? T-E-A-R.
Yes!
Oh, he hasn't got an E.
Hang on, what's the J stand for? In Donald J. Trump. We'll have to find that out. Because
maybe it's like it is in Homer J. Simpson, where it's just a letter.
Jump.
Donald Jump Trump.
Oh, it's John.
So where are we now with Warren, with Wazza? At first he sounds like a kind of decent guy, and now we're not so sure. He's accusations of adultery and...
I don't know, you've spent the last 5 minutes talking about Carly Simon, so...
He must be a man with a lot of air miles, if he's willing to make these journeys at the drop of a hat.
Does this reflect well or badly on him?
It's great, having lots of air miles. I'd be pleased with it.
We'll keep it in the bank and see if we can use it against him later.
It might be a deal breaker later on.
All right, we'll move on then. Sarah, what are you bringing to the table?
I am bringing Hanky Panky by Madonna.
Some girls, they like candy, and others, they like to grind. I'll settle for the back of your hand, somewhere on my behind. Treat me like I'm a bad girl, even when I'm being good to you. I don't want you to thank me, you can just spank me.
So that was Madonna with Hanky Panky, which was from 1990, from her album I'm Breathless, which is kind of a concept album based upon her starring role in Warren Beatty's film Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy's like the parent film to the album, And Dick Tracy was also released in that year, and that was directed, produced, and starred Warren Beatty as, I don't know, as a gangster or something. I think I've seen it once, but I've not even seen it. Yeah, so Madonna starred in Dick Tracy alongside Warren Beatty, and they were actually, they met on the set of the film, and they were going out at the time for a while. And apparently the story goes that Warren actually asked Madonna to write some songs for the film. And this song, Hanky Panky, is one of those songs, although it doesn't actually feature in the film, it's on the album. And the reason she wrote about this sort of character who enjoys spanking is because she felt that was something her character, Breathless Mahoney, in Dick Tracy, would enjoy. And that's why she hung out with like unsavoury characters in the film, as played by people like Al Pacino. It was actually blacklisted on some US radio stations at the time and caused controversy in Ireland in some women's organisations. And she had to tone down some of the lyrics, apparently, because Disney didn't like it. And it was number one in Finland, so says it all.
And number two in the UK.
Number two in the UK.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it?
And number 10 in the US. Yeah, it was number two. Do you not remember this song?
No.
No. According to a biography from 2010 about Warren Beatty, the biographer estimated 12,775 lovers.
It's a very close estimate.
It's a very close estimate.
I mean, it's very specific.
Very specific. So yeah. I wonder if he like listed them all. I don't know how he came to that number. But anyway,
no. Average over a year, wouldn't you? You'd sort of think average in a year.
Well, Nathan, yeah. I've done the maths.
Oh, right, okay.
I've done the maths, and I've taken it, if you take from his age of 16 to when he got married in 1992, that's 39 years, so that's 327.5 women a year.
Okay.
And so that's just over six a week. And that's only if you sleep with each woman once.
That absolutely backs up Carly Simon's claim.
Doesn't it? And also, in an interview with Madonna, she apparently said he was an incredible lover.
Right.
He's had a lot of practice.
Well, he has had a lot of practice, hasn't he, by then? By 1990, if he got married in 1992, then he's probably at least 12,000 in.
We're building a bit of a picture here of Wazza.
But the only kind of reservations I had about, it's working against my song really, was that if he's that many women, having sex with that many women, there's not really much time for hanky-panky, is there?
Or making films.
Or making films,
or having dinner.
In a way, it's perfect that this is International Women's Day.
I know,
because he's slept
it?
With so many of them.
it's like a tribute to all those women.
It seems fitting.
I know. I did have reservations about the song for those reasons, but then I don't know.
It won't be International Women's Day when this goes out, so it won't matter.
Fine.
So he's off the hook.
He's off the hook.
So this is what I was talking about at the beginning about karma. Did he get what was coming to him? I mean, he's obviously broken some hearts over the years.
Hang on a second. What evidence do you have to say that he's broken some hearts?
Well, you're exactly right. If you're seeing 6.5 women a week, you probably don't have time to break their hearts.
Exactly.
They probably don't know what's happened to them. It's like the Tasmanian devil. <on fire. laughs>
I feel sorry for the half a woman.
Yeah. That's what he's into. And that's Serge Gainsbourg, isn't it?
Can't say that.
That the definition of incest? No, it's not. This song, you'd think that Madonna would do her utmost to sort of forget about this period of her career. But in 2004, she performed it.
I know.
As part of her tour.
I think she was quite pleased with it. And who wouldn't be? It's number one in Finland.
Yeah.
And recently, the Huffington Post named it number 5 of the top 13 most underrated Madonna songs. Top 13. But incredibly, this was also her first single after Vogue.
Doesn't really make me want to explore her back catalogue.
Did it make you want to spank her back catalogue? She wasn't just promoting the film, was she? She was promoting her own persona as a sort of sex fiend that was prevalent in that period.
I think she thought she was trying... Well, the way she described it is she was promoting what she thought the character of the film would like. Mm. And she thought people would find it comical because obviously Madonna is such a dominant character, seeing her in that kind of more submissive role would be counterintuitive.
Because it's kind of fun, isn't it? I mean,
it's a silly song. Because you could get... I can see why women's organisations got upset about it at the time.
Why in Ireland?
I don't know. Just why the Irish. They just hate spanking.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Has anyone seen Dick Tracy?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I watched the trailer.
I don't think I've seen it. It's because it's his, as far as he's concerned, it's his crowning achievement, isn't it?
He loved it.
It's his kind of, the high point of his own career.
He's still considering a sequel, apparently.
He's still banging on about a sequel, isn't he? The
trailer
was interesting, I thought, for it. If you were being very polite, you'd say it was a precursor to Sin City.
Right.
But it's also got these mad primary colour graphics going across them, which made it look like an acid house music video to me a little bit. And 1990, I mean, that was the time, that was the style.
More tunes of what you'd see on the dance chart on the chart show.
Yeah, but Madonna's performance in the film was critically acclaimed.
Yeah, and I think it got a lot of Oscars, actually, and Golden Globes.
He is Mr. Oscars.
Mr. Oscars, yeah.
He was nominated 14 times, only won once as director for 1981's Reds. And he's quite gracious in his acceptance speech in the 1981 edition of the Academy Awards, wearing glasses. He does look a little bit smug, I have to say, if I'm honest. I don't know, my opinion of him keeps changing.
Do you think in hindsight, thinking back to that evening in 1981 where he did win the award and thinking, did they get the right envelope? Should this be someone else's, really? I'm not going to say anything now.
Could it be one of his 12,775 spurned lovers who got backstage at the Oscars?
Swap the envelopes.
Or is Martha Ruiz? Could we perhaps... We could make the... He could get the rights to the film for it, couldn't he? Such is his personality. Why doesn't he? It'd be all about him, wouldn't it? Okay, well, moving on. We've come to our fourth and final song. Ian, what have you got for us?
My song is Green Velvet and La La Land.
Looking for the after party to begin. I'm going down to La La Land. I hope to see you soon in La La Land. Something about those little pills and real.
Where were you the moment Warren Beatty opened the wrong envelope at the Oscars? I was asleep. But he created the ultimate Academy Awards water cooler moment and therefore accidentally made himself known to a generation who'd not heard of him before his big mistake. If we're picking the song that best represents Warren Beatty today, we can forget any reference to his past career highs, his own awards, his own films, his celebrity flings and famous family members. Because there are only three words we'll associate with Warren from now on. And two of them aren't even really words. La La Land. And this song by Mohawk's Detroit techno legend Green Velvet repeats those words over and over and over again. Although arguably not as often as they're now repeated in Warren Beatty's Nightmares. But it makes total sense, doesn't it, that Warren considered La La Land to be the real winner. At the risk of contradicting myself, he is a man steeped in Hollywood history, a stellar track record of film success in front of and behind the camera, multiple glamorous partners, and unimaginable wealth and fame, the Prince of Hollywood. He is La La Land. It's fitting then that he'll now be forever tied to it because A, the postman delivered the wrong letter, and B, he clearly forgot to put his glasses on. And even if the film didn't win, despite Warren's best efforts, I think we should all agree that this tune deserves an Oscar for soundtrack in Warren's most embarrassing performance.
I mean, although he didn't say those words, unfortunately. Two other people the night said it. Faye Dunaway said it, and so did Jordan Horowitz, who was the producer of La La Land. And did you think showed incredible dignity up on the podium there?
I'm going to be really proud to hand this to my friends from Moonlight.
That's nice of you.
When it dawned on them all that suddenly they weren't the winners. And there's two ways you could have reacted there. You could have been mortified and angry and had a hissy fit. But what he did do, I thought it showed a great dignity that he invited Moonlight up and he showed to the camera the true card. And he said he's really proud that they've won and happy for them in the end. He came out of it really, really well, that guy. Certainly better than Warren Beatty did.
Yeah.
I feel a bit sorry for Warren in this because it seems a bit, it's not his fault And he's got a lot of the blame. He didn't even say the words. There was someone else on stage with him. And it's interesting that all the attention's been focused on him.
Well, he was the one who tried to explain it away in the ceremony, wasn't he? He was the one who stepped forward and admitted the mistake and tried. I don't think he did that with a huge amount of dignity, though.
Did he not? I haven't actually seen any of the clips, so what did he do?
Covering his back.
Yeah.
Massively covering his back. Carly, Simon were sitting at home, they're going, ha, yeah, typical bloody wazza.
Carly gets the last laugh.
He covered his back. Vain, glorious man that he is. Came to the front of the stage and didn't even have the guts just to step back. It had to be about him. And he lingered as well. He lingers for ages. He finishes his little thing and he realises that people are laughing with it and he just tries to soak it all in.
I think you're picking on an infirm man.
He's made himself infirm with his fertility flying off around the world.
He might have been dead years before had he not had so many lovers. You don't know. He might have kept him alive.
Ooh. He'd been faithfully married, according to my calculations, since 1992 to Annette Bening.
So, Green Velvet.
He's a Detroit techno house DJ who's been doing a long time, early to mid-90s to the present. Also DJs as DJ Kashmir and a few other pseudonyms. But this song was released in 2001. He's well regarded in house and techno circles as being somewhat of an innovator. Maybe this song itself doesn't necessarily show him at his best.
What he's uniquely known for, though, is the fact that he writes, produces, and then he performs the lyrics to his songs as well. They are idiosyncratic. They are funny, they are surreal, totally unusual for a techno producer to do that.
I am pretty sure that Warren Beatty loves techno, which is the other reason for picking this song.
How so?
I've got no evidence for it, I've just got a feeling.
That's not going to cut it, I'm
afraid. That's not
enough. So I think what we've tried to do today, each of us, is show that isn't what Warren Beatty should be remembered for.
I'm not saying it's what he should be remembered for. I'm saying it's what he will be, certainly for purpose of 2017.
This podcast drops in 2 days. After that point, he'll be remembered for other things, I think.
For example, being a horrible womaniser.
Yeah, having slept with thousands upon thousands.
12,775.
Although, to be fair on him, he did deny this, and I think he said to the Daily Mail, do the maths. It's just not possible. But I did do the maths, and it is possible. And that's being quite generous as well in terms of his faithfulness.
Right, well, four strong arguments. We'll go to the decision now. We each vote here the song that best embodies Warren Beatty. We'll start with you, Nathan, because you went first. Who's your winner?
I think I'm going to go for You're So Vain.
I'm going to have to vote for Hanky Panky.
Wow. So it's very tricky. A song about Warren or a song written for Warren. But I think I kind of like to give Carly the last laugh. So I think I'm gonna go for Carly and You're So Vain.
I try to bring a contemporary twist to the whole thing. You guys are all living in the past. That's your problem. And if you can't see the future that is Electro Clash, then that's your problem as far as I'm concerned. But I think it would be futile to vote for myself at this juncture, so I'm also going to go for Carly Simon. I think it's the one which has got the clearest link to Warren Beatty, but it's also, he's just showed himself up to be a bit of a prat, really. And this is another kind of layer to that, so therefore I'm going for Carly Simon.
So there you have it. The song that best embodies Hollywood Lothario was a Beatty is You're So Vain by Carly Simon. Listen to it in full, plus other songs from this week's episode and songs that didn't make it past the shortlist on the Spotify playlist we've posted to Twitter and on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening. Guests, make some noise.
La La Land!
What have you done?